This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague, Wheelie Pete at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is episode 99, number 99. And we are now 5 minutes to seven in the UK on the 18th of April. A Tuesday, we're a day early. Why are we a day early? Well, tomorrow I am going to watch my nephew, who is on the cusp of signing professional football deal with a football club, and he's reached the final of a competition, and he's playing two years above the age that he is. So that's how well he's doing.
He's obviously
high standard, very good, very tall, very fast. He's got all the attributes that I didn't have when I was 14 and I thought I was good.
Don't worry,
I was
mate.
Giddy. Yeah. I was tiny, mate. I was tiny. Hey, I was good, but I was tiny.
If you keep practicing and get him to give you a few bits of advice, a few tips, you'll be there
too
with
late
him.
For me, mate.
You'll be there with him.
I can barely run and sprint around for an hour and a half now any longer. Like,
I try
and keep myself in shape.
Have you seen that walking football? We'll be doing that, mate.
Yes,
that will be me.
Mate, listen. What are we talking? 40 years, mate. 40 years since I was that, you know, at that level that he's at.
Crazy,
at that age.
I
had my trials and I was like, always, oh, I'm sorry, but you're just a bit too short. I'm like, thanks for that.
Cheers, guys.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant to be, Pete. I was meant to be doing this with you, mate. You know, so
obviously.
We all have to reach financial freedom in our own way. And it may not be the first opportunity we get to achieve it. Anyway, Pete, we're rambling. So here we are, guys, ladies and gents. Welcome back. We are one podcast away from the 100. So
wow.
I think we might start there, Pete, and then do the market second, do you think?
Yeah, why not? Let's just go for 100. Yeah, we need to talk about it.
So the idea is this, ladies and gentlemen. We broached it in the last podcast. We are going to go for the 100th one. The ladies and gents that have already made a donation for this particular challenge for 2023 for Memphis are all going to be invited onto the program. All Pete and I are asking you to do is to send us a tweet or a DM to give us the reference number. If you've got your name next to it and attached to it, or a Twitter handle attached to it, we'll know who you are. So we'll just send you a DM with a code to get in. And that'll be a code that's just single use, just for you. It's not an opportunity to invite your friends and family onto the show, five different people accessing the account. And Pete and I are going to invite some of our personal guests. Additionally, I'm going to try and get some of the individuals back that were already on the show. And we'll try and get some of those, including some special guests. And there's a few individuals that I met on Saturday at the Marshall Investor Show, which I'll speak later, who I've invited also. So we're going to try and get quite a few number of people onto the show. Obviously going to record it live as per usual. We've invited you, ladies and gents, that haven't made a donation already, to try and make a donation of £5 just to, you know, just to contribute and just to generate a little bit of revenue and charitable donation to Memphis. If you could do that so kindly on the Twin Peaks Challenge page of Memphis, that would be brilliant. So that's where we are with that. We're going to put a poll out probably tomorrow ahead of the podcast going out to ask those of you that are interested as to what time is best to actually start the show. On the 3rd of May, that's a Wednesday, the 3rd of May, as to whether it's best to do it at 6 p.m., 6:30 p.m. or 7 p.m., allowing you, ladies and gents, that do work to get back home or wherever you are in front of a laptop so you can actually view it live that you that want to attend. Other than that, it's just going to be a bit of fun, a bit of chat and a few surprises. And hopefully it'll be a good evening. And when we do record it and then publish it, hopefully within a couple of days, those of you that weren't able to attend it live and participate will be able to listen to it. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. Pete, anything you want to add to that?
No, I think that's roughly it. As you said, if anyone wants to join who hasn't made a donation to the Menphys, that's M-E-N-P-H-Y-S, by the way, Menphys charity, then, you know, give a £5 donation or more if you feel you can. And it'd be great to have you on the show as well, because it will just make it a bit more of a fun event for TPI 100, which is quite a milestone. I mean, I think we're all, probably you, the audience, are as shocked as we are that we've done 100 of these things, which is quite incredible, especially when you think how we started with some of the, you know, problems we have with sound in the early days.
Say it.
Yeah, well, you know, we found
the sound. I think our newer listeners should go back and listen to Twin Peaks Investing podcast number 1 to about 20. And that's, I think some of you will be absolutely shocked as to how it was. And the fact that some of you were listening at 1 to 20 and persisted and are still here today.
Thanks.
My hat to you and I thank you. I'm ever so grateful for the support that you ladies and gents have shown us, because, you know, sometimes it's about just getting started, you know, and you can improve things as you go along. You know, we've got our cynics out there will say that it's never been improved. You know what I mean? They'll say that it's still tosh. But, you know, fair play. You know, we're here. We've got a sponsor. We're going to hit 100. Lots of podcasts stop, start, and don't get to 5. Don't get to 20. Don't get to 50. And we're on the cusp of it in 100. So that's where we are. And we'll continue to go for a little while longer until I was talking at the Master Investor Show about a divorce, because everyone was calling us a married couple. Yeah,
we sleep in separate bedrooms. Don't worry,
mate. You're in Windsor and I'm staying up in Leicestershire. Never the twain shall meet, mate. That's the way I'm keeping it. So we had the Master Investor Show on Saturday, and obviously I'm there, and I'm not doing anything with regards to Twin Peaks. I'm there representing another podcast I'm doing. And for those of you that don't know, it's called the Investing Matters podcast. And I'm repping London Southeast there. And I've got a panel of people on that particular event that I'm doing. And everyone's going, oh, we're here because we've heard of you via the Twin Peaks program. Where's Wheelie Dealer? And I'm going, you know, what am I, chopped liver? It's like, where's Pete? Where's Wheelie?
Don't.
It was so funny, Pete. They were just missing. They were just wanting to see you, mate. You know? They were like, where's Wheelie? We love it. We love you. We love you guys. We love Twin Peaks. You know, it's so funny. It's brilliant. And it's educational. And we love the reality of it, of what you're trying to do. We love the realness of it. We love the fact you share your losers. We love the fact you share the journey. You mean, and you're honest, and that's what people just kept saying. This is what we do on the program. We don't mince our words. There's good, bad, and indifferent out there. There's some great podcasts out there, but there's some that just unfortunately will not tell you the truth. You know, and there are some out there with just an agenda, and there are some out there that only ever talk about the stuff that they own. That's entirely up to them. Their podcasts to do what they want with. But what we're trying to do here is to give out some content, material, whatever you want to call it, that enables you to learn a little bit. You know, do we know all the best stocks in on AIM or FTSE? No. Do we individually pick the best stocks and always have winners? No. Right? But some people do. It's astonishing how brilliant they are. Until you get to the end of December or the end of the financial year, and they say, oh, we're down 20% for the year. It's like, oh, right. Everyone can have a poor year, you know, but should you have 3, 4, 5 poor years in a row? Probably not if you're a good investor or a good trader. But no one's a good investor or a good trader long term unless they put the work in. And Pete and I are trying to put the work in, and we still get it wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
but some people don't.
It's impossible to you know, achieve some of these amazing results that people claim. I mean, I was just gutted that I couldn't make Master Investor again. I mean, that's 2 years on the trot that I haven't been able to go because of my health. And I was saying to Pete the other night, I think up until, well, I think before that, I'd probably been to like 18 or 16 Master Investors on the trot, and I never missed one.
Wow.
We were even there in the days when, well, like 2008 or 2009, when we had the credit crunch. And we always used to say, you knew the markets were bottoming out if you went to Master Investor and there was nobody there. And you know the markets are topping out if you go to Master Investor and it's really rammed and really busy. And it's incredible how much that works. But, you know, we've been going all that time. And, you know, I've got a lot of people I see as friends there, you know, people I know through Twitter that I've met over the last, yeah. You know, I've been doing my Twitter account since about 2013 or 2014, I think I started that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, we're talking like getting on for 9, 10 years nearly. And there's a lot of people that I've met many a time through Twitter that I meet at the shows and stuff. And I'm just so disappointed that I couldn't make it again. And thank you to everyone who missed me, you know what I mean? And I'm so sorry I wasn't there. And I will be there in future. And I will go to other shows and I will get the wheelie bashes going again. It's absolutely what I intend to do. And I just need to get these problems sorted, which will happen. I'm not gonna let it, you know, not going to let it not be fixed.
Cool. So one of the chaps I want to give a shout out to, I've got to say, there was this chap with his missus there, Southern Trader. I think he's been in touch with you as well, Pete, via a tweet that he put out there.
Absolutely, yeah.
So he was asking for you as well, and so was your pal, Stuart. But there's a chap that's not on Twitter that I want to give a big shout out to. It's called Jared Maloney. And Michael T and I, the three of us had a fantastic conversation about all manner of different things to do with social media, Twitter, investing, life, education, you name it, and trying our level best to achieve financial freedom despite all of the shenanigans of the markets and how difficult it really, really is. And then, you know, obviously the biggest thing that's going to impact us this going forward as well is the fact they've changed all the tax regime for investing, you know, forward, and dividends and so on and so forth. So all of that is going to impact us, and we all need to brace ourselves for that. But the reason I was at the show, I must mention these individuals, was because I put an Investing Matters panel session together. And the individuals that were my panel session were Algie Hall, Moira O'Neill, Jay Younger of Aubrey Capital, and Ian Barnes from Net Wealth. Some of the ladies listening might recognize the name Jay Younger, and he was on Love Island a few years ago, but he took a sabbatical. He's an investment analyst at Net Wealth. Sorry,
right.
At Aubrey Capital. A stunningly good-looking young man.
Well, like us.
Scottish man.
Like us, but
looks nothing like us, Peter. I will share a picture. I've already shared a picture. I'll share a picture tomorrow, Wednesday or Thursday, of Jay Younger. But the four of them on the panel delivered a discussion on investing in uncertain times and absolutely smashed it.
Brilliant.
But, and there's a video coming out. However, my fear was I would get these individuals to the show, and one of those sort of, you know, I'm always like, that you're going to have them sitting on the panel and no one's going to come in the room, Pete. Right.
Yeah.
I walked into the room. There's a few people sat there. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. We meant to start at 12:50. Jim Mellon was on stage, finishing at 12:40. Jim Mellon is a mainstay, right? Mm. Everyone goes to that show for Jim Mellon.
Yeah, everyone goes to see
Jim Mellon. Never finishes his spot on time. It's just the way it is because he's inundated with questions.
Yeah.
So we've got a window of 10 minutes, and I've got a room of, I don't know, 140 maybe, of Henry Viola, his partner Verity, a couple of half a dozen other people, and two members of London South East. And I'm going, this is not good. This is not good. This
oh,
is
that, not good. It's like your worst
And then
nightmare.
Some people started trickling in. And then I got the nod. Gym's just finished.
Ah.
And then the room just filled up, and I was ever so relieved, Pete.
Ever so relieved. Brilliant.
And then we started the thing. I had to shut the door because we were like 10 minutes running late, and it filled up. And then there was just room at the back, some people standing up.
Oh, that's excellent.
And then we had Moira go on first, followed by the others, and they absolutely smashed it and delivered a really, really fantastic presentation. And so I'm going to try and do the same, not the same, another panel session at the UK Investor Show for those that are interested in attending. And that'll be the 13th of May, so next month.
Yeah.
That's a Saturday at the QE2 Conference Centre at Westminster, London. So we'll be doing an Investing Matters panel session live again for those that are interested in attending that one. It was fab. And there's a few things that happened during the thing and before that as well, which I'll share with you guys another time. Or you might see on the video that's released in the next couple of weeks.
Is that the conference centre opposite Parliament sort of thing? Yeah, it's the QE2 one, is it?
Pete, I'm the wrong person to ask about anywhere in London. Everyone knows I just get down there and just get lost,
no, is
lost.
It,
and then,
what did you
I
say?
I don't know where it is, mate.
Is it the Queen Elizabeth II?
The QE2. It's the QE2.
Yeah,
two
it is that
one.
Yeah. No, it's a great venue. Yeah, no, that's
yeah,
really
so
cool.
I'll have to find it when I find it, mate. But yeah, that's where we are.
I'm sure you've been there, mate. I'm trying to think
I've been to the what do you call it? The business design center half a dozen times. Doesn't mean I don't get lost on my way there.
Well, yeah, there is that, yeah. Well, mate,
no, absolutely.
It's so near Parliament. It's one of those you really can't miss, and it's a massive building. Yeah. So it's really quite a famous building. So yeah. Oh wow.
So that's happening on the 13th of May. Well, so for those that want to attend, it'd be great.
I mean, again, for UK Investor Show, people can usually get free tickets if you go on Twitter or whatever and just type in UK Investor Show discount code or whatever. You can nearly always, there's someone with some sort of, you know, discount, so you can get free tickets. Even if you can't get free tickets, you can usually get them for a tenner, and it's definitely worth going to.
Yeah, I'll be trying my level best once I've organised the four panel guests or the five panel guests that I'm going to have on my session to get the concessions so that we get a code for people to access the event for free. And once I get that, I'll put that out way ahead of the 13th of May.
Brilliant.
As well.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Joe, on the whole subject of shows, I think it's worth appreciating that investing, I think for a lot of people, is a very solitary affair. And I think
I think
you can get too social with it. You know, you get people who just in this sort of social bubble around investing, and I'm not sure it really helps their investing. It probably just means loads of groupthink and you know, all these kind of negatives. But I think in many ways, if you can use the social aspect, particularly things like Twitter, and go into shows like this and just sitting down for a coffee on a table near someone and saying, hello, who are you? What do you do in investing? And just, you know, sparking up conversations with people. And you can do it at the stands, because you have like, the companies and that are talking to people. Usually there's other people, other investors who are there nearby. You can strike up discussions with them and whatever, and just build up a social network around it. And you can make it less of a solitary individual kind of enterprise, which can make it a lot more enjoyable. I mean, I know for myself that, you know, once I'd given up work several years before, probably about 5 years before I started Wheelie Dealer. And just the whole thing of starting Wheelie Dealer and having a lot more social interaction, it just helps massively. And it makes the whole thing a lot more enjoyable, to be quite honest.
I absolutely agree, mate. I absolutely agree. That's the beauty of networking, I think, and it enables other people to enjoy the event a bit more as well, because they can go there and meet people and have the conversation, which is what we were doing, Jared, Michael T, myself,
exactly,
and a few others, and Henry, exactly. And I think Verity had probably been once before, or I'm not
yeah,
sure if it was,
I know Verity, yeah, hi Verity,
he's been
yeah.
Once before, his wife, and it's about, you know, being less fearful of going somewhere where there's other people that are investing, and the levels of experience that you may or may not have, because at the end of the day, we're all just investors and we're all learning. You know, and there are no experts and there are no gurus. You know, everyone's still learning, irrespective of whether it's a fund manager or a psychologist.
So I think you've really hit an important point there. I think it's very easy, especially when you're a fairly new investor, or if you're only a couple of years into the game, to sort of think, oh, I don't want to go to these shows and stuff because everyone there is going to be really good investors and I'm going to feel out of place and whatever. It's not like that at all. The thing that I found is 90% of investors haven't got a bloody clue what they're doing, to be quite honest. I honestly think that's the case. And you'd be amazed how many people are at the same level or lower level than you are. So don't ever go to these things thinking, oh, I'm not good enough for that. You are good enough, however long.
Absolutely.
Even if you've only been investing a day, you are good enough to go to these shows and to have discussions with people. And what you'll find is that most people, as long as you're not rude, obviously, most people are willing to talk to you and to share ideas and to have discussions. And let's be honest, investors at an investor show love nothing more than talking about investing and talking about what stocks they hold and whatever, you know?
Absolutely, because when they're not in events, exactly, because when they're not at events and they try to talk about investing, they get snubbed and people walk away from them and go, boring.
Yeah.
Not interested in learning and hearing anything to do with stocks and shares and investors. Like, you are boring, mate. Walk away from me. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to talk about football. I want to talk about rugby. I want to talk about bikes. You know what I mean?
You get the...
Even greyhounds are more interested than bloody, you know, stocks and shares. So go to an event.
Mr. Boring label at the parties.
You might as well be a librarian, mate. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. Librarians are more interesting, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, no,
okay,
that's...
I'm going to backtrack now, Pete, and go back to where we should have started.
Yeah.
I'll talk about Memphis a bit later on. Where the markets are, mate.
We've
been riding up since we last spoke, and we're again heading back towards that magic 8,000. So today, ladies and gents, when I looked at the markets and I grabbed the numbers, we were sitting at and closed plus 29 points at 7,909. From the previous close, we're up 29 points at 909. FTSE 250 is trying to reclaim 20,000. That was up just 9 points at 19,296. FTSE All Share had climbed back above the magic 4,000, and it's sitting at 4,297 once more, having gone below that last month. And AIM, for all of its problems, is sitting comfortably above the magic 800, and it's sitting at 832. So that's quite nice, given the volatility we've had during March. It seems, and I've had this conversation with you, Pete, with regards to the banking noise we had with Credit Suisse and UBS and Silicon Valley that we had February, March time. It's almost as if the market's gone, yeah, we've done with that now, we've moved on. And the market just seems to be creeping up. We've had lots of takeovers, which we're going to talk. I'm going to talk about a few a bit later on. But we're sitting nearer, because my worry was, you know, I had this conversation in the last podcast and the podcast before that, you know, 98, 97, even 96, was that there was a worry because of the banking stuff that we might be heading, I thought, nearer to 7,000. Mm. Yeah. And now we're heading quietly. No one wants to say it. And I don't want to poo-poo it and or put the, you know, curse on it. But we're heading towards that 8,000 again.
Yeah.
We're at 909.
Do you know
so
what?
All those people that were short in the market thinking it's going to go to 7, we're now there at 7,900.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Sorry, the question is what the sorry, Pete. The question is why.
Well, I think the why is that I think the problems with the banks have been seen as problems with specific banks at that time. So, you know, Silicon Valley Bank, which had its own particular aspects, Credit Suisse, which we discussed on the last call, we said Credit Suisse already had problems. So it was an easy one for the shorters to target and whatever. So I think there was an element of that. I think the big concern or the main concern around the fallout from that banking thing is if we get banks not so willing to expand their balance sheets and not so willing to make loans. Because if they're not willing to make loans, then that can reduce the amount of demand in the economy and add to the recessionary pressures. But then, you know, arguably some more recessionary pressure would be positive to bring inflation down, and we'll get the inflation, UK inflation, we get the read tomorrow. But I think the inflation reads from America being quite not too bad. So it's a very mixed picture. In terms of the index, I think I sort of feel that for the last 2 weeks since we recorded podcast 98, we've had weird weeks because we've had Easter and the bank holidays and stuff. So you've got these short weeks and you've got incredibly low volumes. If you look at the volume charts, I mean, they've been astonishingly low. I mean, just ridiculous levels. Mm. And when you've got these low levels of trading volumes, you get these, you know, you get these volatile moves where things are moving around intraday like absolute crazy. And I think what we've had in the last 2 weeks is like what they call a melt up, where the markets have just drifted up. And I remember, you know, Nicola Duke, yeah, at Nick Trades on Twitter. She's a bit of a sort of guru of the whole trading and the technical side. And I remember something she said on a tweet a million years ago, and I remembered this, and it was, she said, never short a quiet market. And I think there's so much truth to that. You know, that really sticks in my brain. But I think the other thing is, I think we're getting up to what we're, you know, just over 7,900. I think the all-time high on the FTSE 100, which we hit recently, was something like 8049 or something like that, 8047, that kind of level. I think there's a fair chance we might get towards 8,000, might get towards that high again. But I think we could be in a range now between really 8,000 and maybe 7472. We could get back in that range through the summer, I think. What's your take on it?
Similar thoughts, Ben. The conversation I was having with you, I think, on the last podcast or the podcast before, was the fact that we could have a bit of a lull before the new ISA season. The ISA season started, obviously, 2 weeks back. And that ISA money has been pouring into the market. Some people have already, you know, spent their allowance on the market. But a lot of money's gone in for the month of April already. And the market's crept up. We've had a few takeovers go on. And I suspect, really, Pete, it won't take much. If we get some of our larger entities, you know, the likes of GSK, the likes of AstraZeneca, BP, Shell, etc., and even your HSBC doing well, you could easily just pop. There's lots of pressure resistance at 8,000, and it won't take that much to actually push it.
No, push it. Yeah,
we're less than, we're just over 1% away from 8,000. Yeah. We could do that by Friday with a bit of good news. Equally, any bad news, you know, inflation numbers sticky and it goes, we're back up, tell us again, it's above 10%.
Yeah,
market gives up another percent easily and we're back below 700-800 again, and they try again. But it won't take much to go above 8,000. And I've been a pessimist on the markets for how long? A year.
Yeah,
and there's me saying potentially we can do 800 now, sorry, 8,000 now, because it's just been doing it on almost no news. There's no reason for it to be so cheery.
Yeah.
You know, and I was saying about the banks a couple of podcasts back, this is not good. This is not great. This just undermines the market. I'm a bit worried. I didn't want to buy that stock. I was going to buy that, but I've chosen not to because I'm weary of the markets. And the market's gone, more fool you, Pete. I'm just going to carry on going higher, you know. So this is it. No one knows it all, mate. You know, only a fool knows everything, Pete. You know?
Do you know what? I read something today, probably in an old Investor's Chronicle, which astonished me, really. It basically made the point that banking crises and bank runs, so the collapse of a bank, because bank runs are incredibly common. And believe it or not, in the period from something like, I don't know, say the last 10 years or whatever, there's been an unbelievable number. I'm sure it said something like 2 banks a week in the US have a bank run. Now, what you need to understand on that is that the structure of the US banking system is very different to the European and UK banking systems. So in America, you've got all these regional and local banks and all that. And I mean, I've no idea, but I imagine it could be a throwback to the old days of the stagecoaches and the gold rush and the little bank in the town. I think there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And these little banks are just collapsing all the time. And apparently that's totally normal. And it doesn't happen in Europe and in the UK, where you've got much bigger institutions that cover much smaller areas, because obviously the countries are much smaller. Whereas the country of America, the country of the US is a flipping continent, So they're very different, and the regulation is very difficult. The regulation in Europe and UK is actually a lot stricter. So I think it's really interesting that that's the case. So it could be that, like with Silicon Valley Bank going, it's like a more common thing than we realize. And I think we all, it's very easy to think, oh my God, we're having a bank run. It's 2008 all over again. When actually it's probably not, and it doesn't look like it is. And in fact, US banks in the last few days or whatever have put out really strong earnings figures, have been really good.
The larger ones have. Yeah. I still think the American banking ecosystem is flawed, Pete.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
There's so many of them that are too interconnected for my liking. And you look at some of the very, very behemoth banks. You think about, you have to scratch your chin and go, how did they make that amount of profit? Use somebody else's words that I saw on Twitter. And these aren't my words, people, so excuse the language. Who have they screwed over? To get those kind of profits.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it's scale. Yeah. A lot of it's scale. It's like with Apple, right? Obviously not a bank.
No, it's not scale. It's trading. No. They're trading.
Yeah.
But all manner of things. They're hedging something long and telling someone to short something the other way.
Yeah.
They're using accounts, nominee accounts, and accessing the data for those accounts. They're slicing and dicing all the trading for this, that, and the other. And you're paying £1 for something, right? And they're shaving that quarter of a penny or a quarter of a cent of something on every single transaction that you make.
Yeah.
So it's just unbelievable the amount of profitability that's out there regarding those banks. And our banks are probably trying to do a similar sort of thing. And when it goes wrong, when the toxic bits of the banks in the US and the UK goes wrong, that's why we have a regular occurrence of financial crisis, Pete. They've made our banks in the UK stronger. Yeah. Mm. They've put better assurances within them and all the rest of it. But we're still going to have a future financial crisis, Pete, in the US and in the UK. Yeah. And it isn't going to be because of some tiny little regional bank. Yeah. It's because of the toxicity within the banks. And if you go in and do proper research of the US banks and our UK banks and the European banks, they've still got a lot of SHIT within them. So there's going to be a problem going forward. So don't you get to the point where you think, nah, we're all right. We're not going to get another bank run. Or we're not going to get another financial crisis. There's another one coming down the pipe, mate. And just keep an eye on Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Mate, on the indexes, there's some other interesting things happening. Something happened on the NASDAQ today. It hasn't, at the time of recording this call, and we're pushing on for half past seven on the Tuesday night that we talked about at the start. The NASDAQ at the moment is still, you know, putting in a sort of, it's a down day, but it actually opened much higher. But the point is, the NASDAQ actually opened higher than its peak from 1 month ago. So it got very near trying to break out, which, you know, is quite astonishing, really. And if we get a break, a proper end of day, decent breakout of that peak from 1 month ago, that is hugely technically positive. And when you look at things like the RSI level and things like that, from memory last night, the NASDAQ was only on an RSI of 62. You can go, if you're on an RSI of 62, the NASDAQ could easily go to 75. There's a lot of potential upside from that. So I thought that was really interesting. And the Dow has done interesting things because that is doing like a sideways consolidation. And usually when you've had a good run up and then you do a sideways consolidation, it nearly always leads to another leg up. So there's a good possibility there. The other interest was the CAC 40 has made a new all-time high. I mean, that's incredibly bullish. But bear in mind, in France, CAC 40, it's only 40 companies. And there's massive skew in these European indexes. So if you think like, you know, in the UK, HSBC, GSK, AZN, SHEL, BP, are all big companies with big weightings within the index and they affect the index. It's even worse in like the CAC 40 and the DAX and some of these European indexes, you get really skewed. The DAX is nearly at its all-time high. It's pushing towards it. The really interesting one and one that I'm absolutely fascinated about, but I never talk about it. I never mention it on tweets, but I'm watching it. And that is the Nikkei. The Nikkei 225 has gone up, it's done the usual sort of rise and whatever, but for probably 6 months, it's been in this big range. It might even be longer than 6 months. And it's an incredible range. And if that breaks out to the upside, there is going to be a massive move on the Nikkei. And for people to go long on the Nikkei when it breaks out, that could be an absolute monster trade, I think. So I'm sort of toying with that one myself and thinking if it breaks out, I might have a little nibble at that on a spread bet. Have you seen
that? No, mate. That's one market that I very rarely touch because the volatility on the Nikkei is so vile.
Have you looked at the chart, mate? Look at the chart. It's incredible.
I haven't looked at that chart for years, Pete.
Mate, that range.
You feel your boots, range. Mate. You fill your boots, mate.
I will go for it.
Yeah. don't come to me crying in your pipe of your beers that you've got there.
Don't come to me crying when it all goes wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm de-risking, mate. I'm not adding risk. There's this book here. Look. Can you see title of that one, Pete?
I can't say.
Equity Risk Premium. Ooh, the long run of the future of the stock market. And very old book, mate.
Wow.
Yeah. Try and read books that other people don't read. Yeah.
Right.
Don't read all the same books as everybody else.
Was it correct? You said it was written for a while ago about the future. So what was it right?
Ah, stop it. That's not what it says.
Hey.
Right.
Books.
Go on.
Books, mate. Books.
You want to talk books?
No, you do. Okay. You want to talk books.
Yeah, I want to talk books. I mean, we're back. We're still in the competition. Everyone's, you know, we've had February March winners. They've chosen their books. They chose John Stefek's book, and they chose Phil's book. These two. It's going to collapse, isn't it? Anyway, Sales Phil's bought quality shares.
Quality shares.
Yeah. Quality shares. And The Skeptical Investor by John Stepek.
Excellent.
We've got two more. One more here. This is the one I wanted to show you last time, I think. And this is Terry Smith's book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. That'd be good. That'd be
Investing good. For growth, trying to pick the best quality companies out there. Everyone knows Terry Smith. Everyone knows what he's done and his funds have done over the historically for quite a few number of years now. And he's made long-term investors extremely, extremely wealthy by them following his methodology. Mate, so that was something to educate people on. And that's one of the Harriman House books that people can actually win as a prize. And it's one of the 15 that people can win.
This morning, Algie Hall, who you had at the Master Investor Show for you, he put out a tweet saying that they'd been looking at elite companies. So
that is the new that's his new piece of work that he's doing, and he's put out a piece of research regarding the best companies globally, not just UK.
Yeah, so this was on Twitter that I saw it, and I took elite companies to mean sizable companies, but the best of the best, the absolute elite,
the best
on various metrics. And do you know what? I thought, and it had a chart. You can find it on Twitter if you go to Algie Hall's Twitter account.
It
had
a chart. I retweeted it myself, Pete. Retweeted it myself earlier.
Brilliant. Well, I did. So, and it had a chart, and it sort of showed the performance of these elite 10 stocks against, you know, other measures and whatever. And these elite 10 had absolutely stuffed everything. But do you know what? The link is, it reminded me of Terry Smith, because Terry Smith is very much of that approach with his sort of main fund, where I think he only holds like 22 or 24 stocks or something, and he goes for the best of the best. And it really reminded me of the Terry Smith approach.
Yeah. So what he's got here is that he started 9 months ago this elite company's top 10.
Right.
And thus far, in 9 months, it's outperformed the MSCI World Index by 25% already.
There you go. There you go.
So if you want to have the best of the best, and you want some diversity globally, that's what he's put together already for the stocks. I mean, the difficulty you've got is having a platform that enables you to access all of these stocks. And the top 10 at the moment is very, very global, right? So you've got Taiwan Semiconductor.
Yeah.
So what platform do you access that one on? Microsoft, which most people can get hold of.
Yeah.
Tencent, which again is a difficult one to access sometimes.
List on
Alphabet
Nasdaq,
you can access. Samsung Electronics.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce this one. Kai Chao Mao Tai. I don't know what that is.
No idea.
Mercado Libre. You can get that one on the US index.
Yeah.
WillScot Mobile Mini on the US stock.
Never heard of it.
Alizim Therapeutics Halo on the US stocks.
Yeah.
Samsung, you should be able to access that somewhere. But at the moment, that's beating the MSI index. I'm not sure if it's a comparison to others. And it's beating the iShares MSI World ETF and the Vanguard S&P 500 ETF.
Mm.
Apparently. So yeah, go and have a look at that article by Algie. As I say, he absolutely smashed it on Saturday. And bizarrely, it says the two stocks to leave the top 10, which might re-enter hopefully, were ICI Bank and the British drug giant AstraZeneca, which had been dropping out.
Wow.
But it's now rising back up. I'm going to speak about AstraZeneca again because it spiked today. I'm not sure what was going on, but it spiked to 120 odd today.
Do you know what?
I know there's some people.
The interesting thing as well on that elite companies thing, as you say, it may be difficult to get exposure to some of those. But what could be worthwhile is looking at the methodology that Algie has used and thinking, can I replicate that methodology and use it as a screening device to screen on UK stocks or whatever to see if you can select elite stocks within the UK universe, which may be harder to do.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. This is, I keep saying this, and no one appears to want to listen, but it is far better.
They're listening,
they're
mate.
Not listening, Pete.
They're listening.
It is far better to do your own research and find the stock idea yourself. It's no good just going on Twitter, going on Stockopedia, going on Shareskope, going on ADFN, going on London Southeast, and just trying to copy the same ideas from whoever you think is a really good investor. It's better to do your own research. Oh, it takes too long. I haven't got the time. You will spend more money investing in a portfolio of stocks over the next 5, 10, 20 years, yeah, than you will buying a fridge or probably a house.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, sorry, time. I'm saying time. You'll spend more time researching buying these items.
Well, you'll spend more money if you lose.
And therefore, it's better to just spend a bit of time researching where you're going to put your hard-earned money. Mm. Spend some time having a look and spend some time reading some books. And the benefit of that will be that you'll find some stocks that are off the radar of other people. You won't have to wait for Simon Thompson to write about it. You won't have to wait to see it joining, you know, Terry Smith's portfolio. You can get ahead of him. Yeah. And you can find some of these stocks that are being taken over for 20, 30, 40% premium. And if they don't get taken over, they might recover. They might perform better than the stuff that everybody else has got. If you're buying a stock that everyone else has got, you can only achieve the performance of an average of those particular crowd of people that are in that same stock. Yeah. So let me give you an example here now, right, of a stock. It's called Bellus Health, ticker symbol BLU, right? And it has just been taken over by GSK.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. GSK are paying 103% premium for this stock. Yeah. They are paying $2 billion for this chronic cough drug, right? $2 billion. It failed or had a setback for phase two in July 2023. And the market cap for Bellus Health, ticker symbol BLU, was $150 million. Fast forward less than 3 years, GSK are now paying $2 billion. How many 150s is there in $2 billion?
A lot.
Do the maths.
A lot. Yeah? Yeah.
So you're looking at 13, nearly 14 times bagger. 14 bagger from the lows of July.
Incredible. Yeah? Incredible.
You just need to find that halfway there and you made 3 bag or 4 bag or 5 bag. Yeah. There are those opportunities within the stock market right now for you to do your independent research. Yeah. And have a multi-bag. Oh, I'm not bothered about talking about multi-baggers again. All right. So find a stock that doesn't go down. Does it lose you 5%? Does it lose you 20%? That doesn't have a profit warning next week. Yeah? But you found it yourself. Don't wait for the crowd to tell you what to buy. Wait for that person to go on a podcast and say, buy that stock. I bought it. I think it's great. And it gets ramped by all the other people that are in that same cohort. Yeah? Do your own research. Yeah? Another stock. Sort of chain started. Let me just finish, Pete.
Yeah, yeah.
This pharmaceutical chain of takeover started with Pfizer just about a month ago, right? Pfizer, this wasn't talked about much because it's not a UK listed stock, right? Mm. Pfizer made a massive, right? The biggest takeover in drug history since 2020. They spent $43 billion on a company called Seagen.
Wow. Right?
Basically, no one's talked about it. $43 billion. The last time they offered that kind of money for any company was when they were trying to buy out AstraZeneca.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a biopharmaceutical company that specialized in cancer medicine, right? What we had going on since then, we've had Merck, right? Merck came out a couple of weeks, Sunday night, saying they're buying Prometheus Bioscience for $2 billion. Sorry, not $2 billion. For $10.8 billion. Yeah? Wow. So there's another one. $43 billion, $10 billion, right? Then you've got Dechra, Unloved veterinary pharmaceutical company, completely unloved. Got spanked. Shares went down to 26 quid, sub 26 quid. Yeah. And what happens? Private equity goes, long term, they're going to sort this out. We will offer them £40, 70 pence per share. You could have had a couple of months back, or even back in end of March, beginning of April, Decra for £26 per share.
I'm pretty sure we talked about the podcast a while ago.
Somebody goes, wallop. Yeah, we talked about Decra.
We did talk about it a while ago. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Wallop, we'll buy that for £40. They're out there, folks. It just takes a bit of research.
Yeah.
You've just got to put a bit of time in. Then we've had, I'll let Pete get a word in edgeways in a minute. Just bear with me, Pete. You've had Network International, FinTech play, which no one wants.
Yeah.
What's the premium on that one, Pete? Was that 40%? Was that 50%?
It was up a lot, wasn't it? It was up a lot.
And it's not even come out with it. it's just bids everywhere, mate.
It's funny, though, because that Network International one, I've looked at that several times and I wouldn't have touched that with anything. Do you know what I mean? There's certain companies that do not interest me at all. And that was definitely one of them. I just thought.
This is what I'm saying, Pete. People go, that's a crap stock. That's a rubbish stock. And it's when they go up 30, 40, 50% and there's a premium takeover, they go, oh. Wood Group, Pete. It's had five bids.
Yeah, well, that one.
Absolutely written off. Nobody wanted it, right? Yeah. And now everyone owns the stock because it's been taken over.
No, I mean, I can see a good case for Wood Group, and I totally get that. My issue with Network International was we've had so many problems with companies that are listed in those kind of areas and operate in those areas. And I just thought, that is not something I want to take a chance on. Not remotely interested. Someone's done well on it. Brilliant. Well done for them. I really couldn't care less. You know, well done. Fantastic. But it's just not something for me. And I think one of the important things in investing is learning to screen out things that don't interest you. You were talking just now about the US market. I don't take any notice of the US market. I don't invest in the US market. I'm not particularly bothered what's happening over there. Yeah, I'll listen to the headlines and hear the banks are doing okay, and it's interesting that these big pharma deals are being done and whatever. I have exposure to it through, you know, Worldwide Healthcare Trust. I've got tech funds. I keep an eye on the Dow and the NASDAQ and that from those kind of levels. But on an individual stock specific basis, I don't want to be dealing in dollar stocks. And it's just not something that particularly interests me. I'd rather put my specialism on the UK and learn all I can about UK stocks and the quality UK stocks that I am interested in, but not the ones like Network International that I would just never go near. Just not for me.
Fair play, Pete. Fair play. The thing for me is that I think we're trapped in a very UK centric investing sort of bubble.
Yeah.
You know, and we started the conversation or midst of the conversation about Halji's portfolio.
It's a diverse portfolio.
He's talking about Taiwan. I'm like, I haven't got the time or the energy or the inclination to research Taiwan shares. But, you know, the more diverse your portfolio, the more it can deal with all the different shocks and the cycles of the market.
Absolutely.
We've got a portfolio which is just UK-centric, and you need to diversify it. You know, you were talking about edging your portfolio and doing a long or a short on the Taiwan, on the Nikkei index a minute ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
that's not
on an individual basis. I understand that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, Pete. About being open-minded to stocks. And I think we get into a situation where we have an experience with an Israeli company or a person that's Israeli who owns that company.
Yeah.
And we lose some money and we're like, I'll never, ever trust another Israeli company. That's wrong to think like that, because not all companies are like that. We've had people who have had companies that have delisted that were British, Pete. That were listed on the FTSE, that were listed on AIM,
all the
that
time.
Were worth £500 million 1 minute and then worth zero the next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
Have you gone, you know what, I got hit by that and I lost all my money on it. I'm never going to buy another AIM stock. I'm never going to buy another FTSE 350 stock. Mm. Hasn't stopped you. So we've got to get out of this fixed mindset loop, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Mate, can we just throw in something else there that links quite nicely with that discussion, actually?
I don't think it's going to link. I guarantee it's not going to link if you're talking about it.
It's gonna link, mate. It's gonna link.
I'm joking. I'm
Basically,
joking.
Share Sock, and I've been talking to a good man, Mark Bentley, yeah, at Marbon100 on Twitter. Share Sock are involved in a shareholder rights petition, which also is something that's got Archie Norman in it somewhere, who's I don't know, he's involved in Marks and Spencer, and he used to be with Asda, and I think he was with Tesco at one time and whatever. The thing is, it's a petition that is about, like most investors in the UK or whatever, have their shares held in nominee accounts. And it's a bit of a sort of bit of financial and legal contractual stuff where basically what it means is you hold shares in a particular company, but you lose out on the voting rights for those shares because it's like they're sort in a way they're like a sort of pooled thing, the way your broker holds them. It's, don't worry, you do own your shares, but you just don't get the voting rights. So this shareholder petition is about having a legal change to ensure that even as a nominee shareholder, you get the chance to vote on decisions that directors are making, so say on your behalf. And the link is, we talked just now about Israeli companies. Well, there's one we all know, which is CAPE. Is that CAPE, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, yeah.
CAPE has obviously got Teddy Saggy involved. He's doing this takeover bid and whatever. Thing is, a lot of the private investor shareholders are against the deal, but they're unable to vote against the deal because of these nominee accounts. So if people can go and sign the petition, and we can just get more and more people to sign this petition and actually get something done about it, it'd be a really good thing. So if you go on Google and you just type shareholder rights petition or Archie Norman shareholder rights petition, something like that, it should appear. Or go to Mark Bentley's Twitter account or contact ShareSoc, because I know some other the people involved in ShareSoc are very much involved in it. But if you can sign the petition, it takes 2 seconds of your time. It's absolutely worth doing, and it might actually help you in the future.
Cool beams, cool beams. Okay, I'm going to quickly give a mention to the Memphis page. For those of you that have already donated, thank you ever so much. And you can find that at the Memphis fundraising page. And we are currently on, let me just see if I can find the details here. 1,478. And as I said earlier, all of you that have got your Twitter handles on here or have got the names on here, I'll be inviting you onto the Twin Peaks 100 live show. So thank you for making donations on that. We've had one person 4 hours ago, I think, have made an additional £5 donation. It just simply said anonymous without any message. So thank you very much for that donation.
Thank
If you'd
you.
like to come on the show, just give Pete or I your reference number, and we'll invite you onto the show for 3rd of May,
And
for Twin Peaks 100.
if you want to stay anonymous, you can come on the show and put a bag on your head, little eye holes in the mouth.
Anyway, moving on.
There is no hope.
We
There
had
is no
a
hope, mate.
donation from Henry Viola at HT Viola on Twitter.
Nice one, Henry.
Who I mentioned earlier was at the Master Investor Show. And Henry's comment is a real highlight of the investing podcast space as the two of you go from strength to strength. Thank you for your continued excellent work. I hope to be donating for many years to come, exclamation mark. And Henry kindly donated £100 plus gift plus £25 gift aid. Henry, thank you ever so much, mate. And it was great seeing you and
Brilliant.
Verity Saturday. I really had a great time catching up with you both. Raj Ramira, who won our February month Twin Peaks Challenge,
Raj
made a donation of £8 plus £2 gift aid. So thank you, Raj. So Raj will be on the show. Still up there as one of the very best investing pods I love. Helps me get through the week with something to look forward to. Hopefully many more to come. Thank you, Raj. That's very, very kind of you.
Cheers, mate.
And of course, we mentioned Roger last time. So
yeah,
Roger Green, Nigel Donetti will be on the show if they wish to and just pass me some details. The person that donated £8 and gift aid last time, Anonymous, TPI and 96 comment will be on the show. Elric was, of course, Lemming Investor, will be on the show, invited. Ali, you'll be getting an invitation. Nigel, the Green Yorkie, will be getting an invitation. The Quality Small Cap Investor will be getting an invitation. Jeremy, you'll be getting an invitation. Wheelie, you won't be getting an invitation. The Monster of Panama, you'll be getting an invitation. That's my mate. You said Pete the Legend. He's not called Pete the Legend. He's called something completely different. I can't even think of his name now. Tomo. It's Tomo. Will be getting an invitation if he wants to come. Mike McGeever. Mike M. will be getting an invitation if he wishes to come on. Anonymous that wrote TPI 94, another informative podcast, will be getting an invitation. Up the Toffees will be getting an invitation. Mr. Sanjay Career will be getting an invitation. Ronnie the Markets, I think that's Ronnie Chopra, will be getting an invitation.
Excellent.
Martin 13 will be getting an invitation. That's another Elric. Karen, we know Karen, will be getting an invitation.
Oh, brilliant.
Dan Blackman will be getting an invitation. Kevin Taylor will be getting an invitation.
Yeah.
PID, P-I-D-D, will be getting an invitation. Anonymous, that gave £7 and £1.75, will be getting a gift, an invitation. Scrumpy Triple Two will be getting an invitation.
Excellent.
Matthew Gregory will be getting an invitation. Peter Higgins will not be getting an invitation.
Don't let me.
Right. So anybody else that wants an invitation directly will be able to donate between now and a week before we go live with the podcast. So I'll give it till the end of April as a cutoff for donations that want to come onto the show, because I need to be able to send the details out ahead of the show, which will be on the 3rd. So end of the month of April for invitations onto the show.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Pete, do you want to add anything regarding the Memphis stuff?
Richard, there's a gentleman called Richard. I won't say his surname on the podcast because I'm not sure if he wanted it in the open or not.
Yeah.
But Richard contacted us, who was 22098998. Richard, you're on it, mate. We look forward to seeing you.
Okie dokie. Okay, so it's just www.justgiving.com/fundraising Twin Peaks 23 if you want to make a donation or something around that sort of a area.
Brilliant.
With regards to donations. Pete, what do you want to add? And then I'm going to talk about a stock, I think.
Right. Well, mate.
We're in an hour in. I don't want to make this another marathon.
The only thing I want to add is this. Explosion IPA. And I'm also going to add, a Fearless Monkey. And I'm going to add a Sizzler NZ Pale Ale. And you're going to say, what the hell's that all about?
This is, we must say, for those of you that are not doing it right now, switch over to YouTube. Pete's pointing out Beers Pale Ale. I think, was there an IPA one as well there, Pete?
Yeah,
and he's looking very happy with himself because he's ordered some beers from the Powder Monkey Brewing Company. West so go on, Coast tell us all about IPA. It, mate. Tell us all about it. Come on.
Well, West Coast IPA. Well, all I know is I ordered a box of 12 beers from Powder Monkey Brewery. And the great thing was I could choose what beers I have, and I just chose a big wide selection of the 12 beers, and they came in a lovely box. But the only problem is they came at the end of last week. It must have been Friday night. I was in the mood to have a beer, whatever. I got the beer all ready, had something on the telly, had the beer, had everything ready, and then I just started feeling a bit rough, and I thought, I can't bloody open it because I feel terrible and I really don't want to drink beer. So I haven't actually opened one and drank any yet. But there you go, mate. That's the pitfalls of being almost teetotal, I think, because I never seem to drink anything these days. But hey, it's a nice idea that one day I'll be drinking those lovely beers.
Cool beans. So the reason why Pete's talking about the beers and longing to drink some beers is because, as we said a few podcasts ago, Powder Monkey Brewing Co. are one of the main sponsors of the Twin Peaks Challenge. And the overall winner is going to be able to access a full day at their brewing company in Gosport. They're going to get a day fed, watered, shown around the venue. And the brewery, they're going to be able to design their own beer, pale ale, IPA, whatever they want to do, then design the labeling for the can. And then the Powder Monkey Brewing Co. are going to ship 200 cans to the overall winner of the Twin Peaks Challenge. It's an absolutely fantastic, fantastic prize. But what they've also given us is that any listener or anybody that wants to access the website can access the website at powdermonkeybrewing.com and get a £5 for a 5% discount off all their purchases. So, you know, we've got the coronation coming up, got the football coming up, we've got the cricket, we've got Wimbledon coming up, you name it, there's going to be something for, and obviously the coronation peak coming up, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I nearly said what I said then when I say in front of me, what I say to my dad when I mentioned Prince Charles. We've always called him Charlie Boy because that's what he that's Charlie what he was. My dad's always called him Charlie Boy.
Charles the first.
He's going to be a king. He's going to be a king. So we're going to have to get my dad to change that.
Going to be king. Wow.
So the coronation is coming up. So order your beers. Get your 5% off. You know, which is what Pete was doing in a fashion to get his special selection of his beers. So, yeah, crack on, Pete.
You're saying that the winner of the Twin Peaks World Championship Five Stocks, the winner is going to go down to Gosport, Portsmouth kind of area, and they're going to, in effect, create their own beer or their own, you know, customized beer, and it's going to have their label and all that kind of... So, mate, it's going to be like an episode of The Apprentice. I mean, it's just going to be...
The thing is, everyone's got different taste buds, Pete. You know, like a sweet beer. I like a not-so-sweet beer. I like a strong beer. You know.
Obviously, they won't let you screw it up. So if you're doing something really stupid, if you've won and you're putting something ridiculous in it, they're going to say to you, don't put that in it.
They're going to help in a fashion, Pete. They're going to have taste tests as well before they brew the 200 cans worth of it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
This is a
fantastic prize.
It's incredible. Fantastic. Prize.
And that's just one of the main prizes. We've got the 15 books from Harriman House as well.
Wow.
We've got a year subscription to ShareScope, SharePad as well. And I'm hoping to navigate some other bits and pieces as well going forward.
When you were describing it in the last episode or whatever, I just didn't take that in, because quite often when we're doing
because
these...
Because you don't listen, Pete.
No, it's because I'm
listen
taking
to talk,
notes.
You don't listen to hear.
I'm taking notes and planning ahead,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And for whatever reason, I just didn't pick up on that. And then when you told me the other night that the person who wins it could design their, I thought that was just like nuts. That's like amazing. Yeah. That is such
wish you were able to win the competition. I saw
I'm
your
gutted.
Face, mate.
I am gutted, mate. I tell you.
And the fact that you actually won the first
winning.
Hunt as well.
Oh, I was ahead. Oh, stop it, mate. Stop it.
Oh,
hey,
my gosh.
Mate, linking back to a conversation we had a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
GSK that bought Bellus Health or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you get a sense similar to mine that since they split out Haleon, HLN, GSK already just seem more on the ball? And what I'm saying is things like, you know, the amount of phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 trial results and stuff they've been putting out on RNSs and that. It's like so much more akin to what AstraZeneca did, because we know that part of the Haleon split was to try and replicate more the success of AstraZeneca. Did you get that sense as well that in the recent weeks since the split, they just seem to be more sort of dynamic? I don't know. It's weird.
It's more than the most recent weeks, Pete. It was happening. But like any pharmaceutical company of that sort of size, they go through phases where there is not much going on regarding the phase 3 sort of status of their pipeline.
Yeah.
AstraZeneca went through that about 3 or 4 years ago. And then people are looking and going, there's not much going on here. And the share price drifts. Obviously, they spun off Haleon. And, you know, loaded it up with a bit of debt as well.
Yeah.
And cleaned up their balance sheet. And, you know, it's almost like they've gone, right, we'll dispense with the consumer side of it and the other bits and pieces of it. And now they've made that first big purchase. That $10 billion has now gone into... on what do you call it?
$2 billion today, wasn't it? On Bellus.
Into Bellus, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is that their pipeline is, because I bought it until the Zantac stuff came out,
yeah,
and then got rid of it again.
Their pipeline
is a rich pipeline, Pete, but there was a gap for about 12 months where there wasn't much going on.
Right.
And now that phase of possibilities of phase 3 is now rich again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they only need to hit a couple of those and it'll be back at 15, 16, 17, 18 and moving up again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're not being anchored. They're free to go about and make other bolt-on purchases. Will they make another big purchase? Probably not. You know what I mean? They're going to make some other smaller purchases, I think. But they're in a very, very strong position.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you and I already own AstraZeneca. You've owned a bit of GSK,
I
think,
as well. Yeah. Yeah.
The reason why they're going to make more bolt-ons, I think, and make some more acquisitions is because someone's going to try and come for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
They are vulnerable having spun off Haleon.
Yeah.
Haleon is vulnerable to being taken over as well because it's been spun out of GSK.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to try and build and build and build. And they do not now want to be taken over. They want to have that independence from the consumer business to actually grow themselves into a larger entity with this richer pipeline now, with the ability to be less laden with debt.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mate, I'll throw in something else really quick that, again, is related to that. I was reading something the other day, again, probably in Investors Chronicle. I think it was a main article from several weeks ago. And what it was talking about was what they call orphan medicines, orphan treatments, which are orphan treatments tend to be things that have a very, very small market. So whereas you've got, I don't know, something like, well, obviously COVID-19, where the market for it in terms of vaccine or whatever was absolutely immense because everyone was going to have it, yeah? And there are loads of drugs that just, you know, cut across everybody. Everybody is a potential user of this particular drug. But then there are these other things that are called orphan drugs, and they have particular designations in the US, in the UK, in the EU, where it depends, where it could only, there might only be, you know, like a ridiculous amount, like say 20,000 people in the whole of the US who might have this particular condition. But the point is, some of these companies are making treatments, solutions, cures for these orphan problems, yeah? Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing was that a lot of these medicines, when they go off patent expiry, because when you get given the rights to be able to sell that drug within a particular jurisdiction, you're given, say, 5 years or maybe longer of patent rights, where basically you can sell that drug with no competition. Then after the 5 years or whatever period is expired, a generic maker of the drug can come along and copy your drug, and they can sell the drug, and they'll sell it under a different name. They'll sell it cheaper, blah-de-blah-de-blah, yeah? Now, it's really interesting that there is a particular type of precision orphan treatment. So what we were talking before about orphan, yeah, there are precision ones where you don't just have the actual drug. You have to have like a blood test or something beforehand. And it's a much more complicated procedure all round. And it means that it's very hard for generic companies and that to copy, even when you're off patent. You were going to say.
Are you heading towards a vector here?
No, I'm not. All I'm doing is
because the one company I was going to mention, in amongst all this talk about pharmaceutical and biotech, yeah. the one company I was going to mention, I'm not going to go into massive details about it,
yeah,
but they've got this precision pipeline. When you said precision, then I thought, yeah, you're going to talk about the same bloody stock as me. Yeah. And it's a Avacta.
A-V-C-T.
C-T okay. is a ticker symbol.
Yeah.
We've done an hour and an odd minutes now.
Yeah.
It's a one stock that I'm saying to people, go away and research it. Go away and research it. Have a look at the pipeline. Have a look at the technology. Have a look at the management and see what you think. It's not a recommendation. It's not a tip. I'm just saying, within that sector, regarding companies that are not quite multi-billion pounds yet, yeah, it's worth researching that company. Yeah, have a look at it. It's a one stock, I'm saying, on this particular podcast. Go away and research it. With it. If you're interested in that sector, pharma, bio, et cetera, go away and have a look at it. That's my only share I'm sharing today.
I just want to add a little bit of detail there. We have a lot of common medicine. So, for instance, right, I take, or I have taken, a thing called lansoprazole. And I imagine lots of our listeners take lansoprazole or a similar medicine. Now, the thing is with lansoprazole, you know, it's a really common medicine. So many people take it. But the point is, just a normal GP can prescribe lansoprazole. Yeah. Some of these precision meds, so they literally can, you know, deal them out over the counter pretty much. These precision medicines, because of the need to do things like blood tests first that then get sent away, and the precision drug gets designed according to your own specific needs. So it's like a customized drug just for you based on, presumably, some of it's going to be based on your DNA.
We had this conversation about 2 years ago, Pete, about precision medicine, personalized medicine.
Absolutely.
We've had it for years. And this is exactly what's going to happen going forward. You're going to look at your DNA strands, look at this, and they're going to personalize it to you.
Yeah.
Almost the same as what they're going to do with certain foods as well for diets. Diabetes being one of the main ones going forward. Yeah. Absolutely spot on, Pete.
And the point as well is that whereas a general practitioner can just hand out lansoprazole, with these things, they need specialist doctor care to take the bloods, to do the work and whatever. So very, very difficult for generics to copy.
Yeah. Absolutely. And makes it, and therefore makes it more valuable.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Makes it far more valuable.
Yeah.
So rather than a 10p pharma, you know, headache tablet, it's going to be £100 per tablet.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's going on here. Right. Pete, I'm done. What have you got? Is he done?
Mate, I think we're pretty much done. I mean, I'll tell you what, cool. I'll just throw in a stock just for the sake of it. I don't hold it. You don't hold it. I don't think anyone holds it. One that had results last week, it's one that's off the radar, whatever. Although I think it was on the radar a couple of years ago.
You keep talking, Pete. Someone's at my door. Yep. Keep talking. Yep. Keep talking.
The one I'm going to mention is good old Watkins Jones, which I think is WJG. Now, it's one of these, like so many of these goddamn stocks, that has got really beat, because it's really a sort of construction type business, yeah. But like so, I mean, you look at the chart on it; it's been absolutely mullered. I think it was up at just looking quickly. It was up as high as £2.70 or something a little while ago. Now they're 92 pence, yeah, at the time of, well, 93 pence nearly at the time of recording this. They've done the classic thing where they've done the, you know, been going along, done the, going along 2 years ago, whatever, year ago, and then done the classic, you know, profit warning collapse. And now they're in that sideways kind of phase. But the interesting thing about them is that they got quite a, I think it's like a family holding, I think, in Watkins Jones. Not my family, but yeah, anyway, not Peter's family. But it's like a family holding. And like I say, they do a lot of construction stuff. But the interesting thing is, the thing that I picked up on is they do a lot of work for constructing student accommodation blocks and stuff. And it was interesting that Unite Group, UTG, had really good results the other day from, you know, that they do renting out student accommodation. And I hold Empiric Student Property, ESP, which is very much the same thing. And I know Watkins Jones has actually built things for them in the past as well. So I think if you, their last trading update about a week ago, whatever, wasn't that bad. And I think it sort of said, you know, we are seeing some green shoots or whatever. So I think it's one of those that's quite beat up. From memory, I think it's a reasonable forward PE ratio and stuff, and a decent dividend, probably like 4.5-5% dividend from memory. So I think that could be an interesting one to look at. You know, it's, oh, look who's back. So you know, have a look at Watkins Jones. It's got that risk of being, you know, construction related and whatever. I think it might be one of those that works out. I don't hold it. I haven't got it. Like I say, I hold ESP that they've done work for in the past. But yeah, one to be aware of, really.
Okie dokie. On
who's that? Note, Pete, who's that at your other... door?
Mate, I dare tell you. So let's just say unwelcomed.
Classic.
Open house. Oh. But we mentioned it last time. And it was Industrial REITs, MLI, and they've now confirmed that bid at 168. But yeah. The other thing in that sort of space, Pete, is what's the name of it now? The ticker symbol SOHO. What's the name of it, Pete?
Triple Point Housing. Right.
And that one there is on the move now because they're going to do, from what I remember, it's doing a buyback or something, but there's something going on there. Some activism. So that's another one to keep an eye out. The whole space, I think, is open for improvements going forward.
Yeah.
And I think what to watch is what happens with interest rates as to when. There's a different talk now. The last podcast we were saying, it might stop interest rate increases and they'll start falling back again before the end of the year. Now that's changing again. But I think because of the discounts, the ones that have got the best covenants, that have got lower debts, there's room for improvements across all of that particular sector, I think. So just to keep an eye on that. And just go back to what I was saying before, do some research and find the ones that no one's looking at. Yeah?
Definitely.
There's some quality stocks out there and some poor stocks out there. And what did I say in the last 12 months of podcasts? There will be more takeovers. There will be more profit warnings. Try and avoid the profit warnings.
Try and find the stocks.
Yeah. Try and find the stocks where you can pick up £1 worth of assets for 50p, for 60p, for 70p, for 80p, or even 90p. And if it's paying you 3% to 5% dividend, at least you've got a shock absorber there where you know that net net, if somebody was to come and say, we want to buy that company up, lock, stock and barrel, they may have to give you nearer to your £1 than the 50p, 60p or the 70p or the 80p or the 90p that you paid for it.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no point going out there buying a highly valued, very richly valued company for someone else to say it's overvalued and we're going to short it, you know. And that's what hedge funds and private equity companies are doing now. They're shorting overvalued stocks.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter whether they're worth 20 billion or 500 million or 50 million. They're going to short it. If they can find one flaw, they're going to short it. And we've seen that with regards to a company that I own and I've been trading like a trading chip, and that's THG. Hated, loathed last year.
Yeah.
I picked it up for 37 pence. I sold some yesterday for 93 pence. Apollo was going to come and make a bid for it. I don't know if Apollo's going to make a bid for it. I know what I view is the intrinsic value of THG, and it's not a pound. It's much higher than that. But, you know, last September, you could have picked it up for nearly 30 pence because nobody wants it. No one is interested in the stock. And I conversed about it here last time. I thought it was worth X. And then you had SoftBank saying, we want out of it. We want to get rid, and sold it off for peanuts. And I was like, whoa, now, you know, how much is Apollo going to pay for it? I don't know, you know, but there's good stocks. There's quality stocks, there's great stock, there's crap stocks, but there's a buyer for something regardless of what it is.
Someone's
going to buy it. Even crap stocks will get you a premium.
Yeah, they will.
You know, you could have the best quality stocks in your portfolio and they can still lose your money.
Absolutely. And they can still sit there and do nothing, which they often do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So do your research. Don't get hung up on your stocks being the best stocks or X, Y, and Z stocks are the worst stocks. You don't know unless you've researched it. So do some research before you comment and do some research before you buy on someone else's comment.
Cool. Excellent. Anything else you need to cover, mate?
Yep. Ladies and gents, we will look forward to seeing you on TPI 100.
Yeah,
make a donation, come on board. If not, I will see you on the 13th of May, face to face, representing Peter and I, right? And you can tell me how much you've missed him and how much you want to see him. So please come to the UK Investor Show, where I'll be doing a panel session with four fund managers and specialists.
Don't say that.
Hoping to get Gervais Williams there. So that'll be a good draw for those of you that are interested. Gervais Williams giving a chat about investing. 13th of May at the QE2 Conference Centre, Westminster, London. Hopefully I don't get lost, but I will see you there. It's an all-day event. So give me a shout if you're there. And if you are on Twitter and you're going to the event, just give me a little tweet to tell me that you're coming, and I'll look forward to meeting and greeting and having a chat with you, and hopefully share a few beers with you as well. Until then, ladies and gents, take care, stay healthy, and enjoy whatever you have to look forward to, and show some kindness to other people. And that includes social media as well. You know, if you've got nothing constructive to say, sometimes it's better to just not say nothing at all. If you've got something kind to say, please share it with somebody. You know, because the biggest problem we've got, and I keep mentioning this, is loneliness. So be kind, go and visit somebody, go and say hello, be generous. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
All the very best to you. Keep smiling. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.